Fantastic. Thank you so much, Doug. And I welcome all those who participated over BBS Radio. Thank you for being here. And we have some more people joining in over the phone line at the conference call. And I welcome the next person. If you want to, please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Don from Brexville. Hi, hi, everybody.
Hey, Don. Doing well. How are you doing?
All right. Great. Thanks.
Thank you for being here.
Okay.
Good morning and welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Julia from Humboldt.
Hey, Julia. How are you doing?
Kind of down. Hi. How are you?
Well, I hope you feel uplifted.
Thank you.
During and after this call. Thank you for being here, Julia. And more people joined in. Welcome, everybody. Please say your name and location.
Paula Crean, Ozark, Alabama.
Alabama?
Ozark, Alabama.
Good morning. Welcome to the call. Good afternoon. And more people joined in. Please say your name and location.
Good morning. It's Jim from Sedona. Hello, Heis. How are you?
Doing well, Jim. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. This is Tracy from Inglewood, Colorado.
Good morning and welcome to the call.
Morning, Rick from Iowa City.
Good morning. Thank you.
Hi, this is Carolyn. I'm from Sacramento.
And good morning. How are you?
Well, I think I'm a little better.
Great. That's a good sign. Being here.
Thanks.
More people joined in. Welcome, everybody. If you want to, please say your name and location.
No.
We hear you in the background. Well, we have a nice group of people here with us. It is right now 10 o'clock. I believe Wynn has... Hello, Wynn, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I hear you, Wynn.
Am I loud and clear?
You are... I think the microphone is too close to you.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yes.
All right.
Morning, Wynn.
Hi, Wynn.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Fruit.
Good morning, Wynn.
Good morning. God, I'm not anonymous. Jeez.
You'll like it or not.
Now that you are very well loved.
Terry, you better mute your phone, okay?
Welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Oh, hi. Francis from Concord, California.
Hello, Francis. How are you doing?
Fabulous.
And welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Steve in Flagstaff.
Hi, Steve. Good morning to you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
Steve, we've been thinking about you.
Yeah, I was. I guess you probably were, yeah. Did you get up here?
Yeah.
I welcome the next person. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location. If you want to. And probably we have multiple. People joining in over BBS Radio. It's 10:02. Thank you all for being here, and I think we're about ready to start off. What do you think, Wynn?
I'm not ready.
All right, then we're going to keep on talking.
Fine.
Morning, Wynn.
Is it Lisa?
Is that Lisa?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Is that Lisa? Hi, Lisa.
Hi, good morning.
And more people join in still. Thank you all for being here. Please say your name and location. Good morning. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Marilyn.
Marilyn. How are you, Marilyn?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. This is Steve again. Isn't it? Good morning. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Judy, Los Angeles.
Hi, Judy. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
I thought she said beauty.
If this is Carla, I want her to speak up.
Hello there, how are you?
Hi, Carla.
Hi.
Are you? Well, how are you?
Hey, everybody.
Welcome, Carla.
Oh. Hi, Carla. Welcome.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Good morning, Carla.
Hello.
Good morning, bud. This is Consuelo from Santa Fe.
Good morning from Santa Fe.
Consuelo. Hi, everyone.
Thank you for being here.
Oh,
good morning, Consuelo.
Thank you for doing this.
So good to have you here, Carla. Welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Good morning, Heis. It's Eric from Phoenix.
Hello, Eric. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank you guys, by the way, who sent me cards this week. I don't want to name you in case you're not on the line, but... thank you so much. It meant so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome, Carla. This
I
is
love
Teresa.
You guys.
We love you, too.
That's such a great arrangement.
Yes, this is beautiful, and we have a bunch of people here, and it's just it's a blessing to be here, I think, for all of us. And we do have multiple people here on the call today who really desire some betterment in their physical lives. And
yes,
I know that we all together here, it's just beautiful. I want to light to all of us. And I also welcome the next person who just joined in. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Gary in L.A. Good morning, hi.
Hi, Gary. Good morning to you. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
All right. Thanks for being here. And another person came in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. Well, we're glad you're here. All right. Terry, are you present? You probably have your phone muted. I saw you were on the line.
Don't be shy.
We hear you way in the background, Terry. Can you improve that, Terry? I think you're on speakerphone or not.
He's struggling to get her mute off.
She's listening one, too.
Family phone system, at least something to be desired.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Now, Carla?
Hey, Wynn.
Now, are you really feeling as good as you're sounding, or are you just locking that up for our call?
Well, better.
When you're coming in on lines.
I'm coming in what?
I believe you come in on two lines. You have two lines open?
No, Terry. Terry?
It's on speakerphone, probably.
Terry's got...
You both have echoes.
Can you hear me now? Is that better?
Yes, better.
Terry had to hang up.
Okay. All right. So Terry is called back in. She hung up her cell phone, right?
You know, she's hearing things. Terry?
What happened to that really good phone she had last call?
I just joined in. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
It's Mel from England.
Marvelous, Mel. Good morning. How are you?
I'm absolutely marvelous. What do you think?
All right. Thanks for being here, Mel.
Always a pleasure.
I saw somebody else came in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. Okay, let's see. We do have an echo. I guess somebody has... yeah, somebody's into the computer as well. Now, please mute yourself by pressing star 6. Phone lines. You won't...
star 6?
Star 6 to mute yourself, yes. Yeah, okay, I'm just going to mute the lines. And then, sorry.
Access code accepted. There are 42 participants in this conference.
Okay, when that's you on your Skype.
Can you hear Terry?
I don't hear Terry, no.
I can hear you now.
Okay, yeah, here you are.
Okay, we got Terry on. Good.
Good morning, Terry.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here all the time. And Carla and Wynn, you guys are beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well.
Wynn's shaking his head back over his shoulders, over the hair.
Wynn,
you didn't look in the mirror this morning at my face.
Exactly. Don't look in the mirror, Wynn. Let me tell you.
All right. We're going to start the recording, and this is, let's see, I got the date right.
This conference is being recorded.
This is June 2, 2013, Wynn in Flagstaff, Arizona, Terry in Flagstaff. So we're somewhere different than normal. Flagstaff is about 30 miles from Sedona, and we had to come up here yesterday to take something to be shipped by Greyhound, and we decided to have a vacation, so we needed one, and we're still on vacation. We had to interrupt our vacation to do this call, but now it's becoming part of the vacation, of course. And, Terry, when's the last time we took a vacation?
I can't remember.
Yeah. So, in any case, that's why the email went out late this morning, and that's why we sound slightly tired, because we're catching up for about a year's worth of lost sleep. Carla, are you there?
Uh-huh.
Good morning to you. That's
good morning, sire.
Carla Ruckert. Carla Ruckert in Anchorage, Kentucky, of course. And she's our sometimes co-host on Sundays. And Carla, I have strict instructions that we're not supposed to make this sound like a church.
Very good. I'll take that under advisement.
What is a church?
There go all those hosannas I had practiced.
Well, what is a church? What is a church, and what does it mean? What's the idea of a church? Why? I'm just thinking out loud since I said that. Why does every religion have a church? Good question. There must be something intrinsic in the idea of a church that resonates at a very deep level for a human. And it's probably our human need to feel a sense of camaraderie with other people. It's part of the way it works, this idea that Jesus said, but that we've talked about many times, when two or more are gathered, we create a energy field. We create a coherence of energies that start to project ourselves into higher dimensions and into those dimensions where God or group souls or however you want to call them exist. Or maybe we go far enough, we don't go into those dimensions, but we go far enough
where they can come down and meet us.
I think that's true, Wynn. And what happens is people get together enough and they love it enough, and it's very innocent. They think, you know, it'd be great if instead of gathering in the field or in somebody's house, we could have a building, you know, and then we'd have a place to meet.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't realize is the worm of Satan creeps in that you have to pay for the building, which means you've got to ask the membership for money. And, oh, my heavens, you have a church.
There we go. So there we have the positive and the negative, right? Because as soon as there's an organization in the physical, there's maintenance. There's rent, there's mortgages, there's electric bills, and there's fear because somebody is there thinking, what if I can't pay the bills? And that starts the process of fear. And then fear starts out the beginning. Carla said the word Satan. Of course, now that turns us into a church, to use the word Satan. What do we really mean by Satan, Carla? What do you mean?
I think most people mean evil, but what I mean by it in particular is fear.
Fear, okay. I would say as soon as your energy starts to predominate in the fear zone, now it doesn't have to. As soon as your energy starts to predominate in the fear zone, you now are projecting an energy outwards into the universe that starts to attract, instead of the really high stuff out there, it starts to attract lower stuff, service-to-self stuff. Because the service-to-self beings can attach themselves to the fear energy, and it's an entree for them into this realm. What do you think of that?
I think that's exact.
Exact, okay. So now you can start monitoring yourself, and you can see one of the things is fear is something which, when it comes upon you, it doesn't mean you can just tell it to go away, because it's not very cooperative. It stays there. And it's not a reason to judge yourself, because you can't help it. One of the worst things you can do if you're in fear is to judge yourself. And you need to figure out a way to move yourself from that space of fear. And I'm just throwing this in. That's one of the reasons we have our team shift program, where people meet every day. If you find when you listen to these calls that your fear lifts, then we have a huge archive. And listen to them until you can reprogram yourself and get out of that space of fear. Because the more you go into fear, the more you will pull in a negative source, or a negative source in another dimension. And that negative source will help spiral the fear. So you're in fear all the time. And that's a worst-case scenario. So let's get back to churches. So people came together because of this. We know the coming together creates a thrust of energy that penetrates into the higher realms, that allows the higher sources to come down and meet us and make a connection. And when they've said they've looked at the earth, to them, in my conversations, the earth looks like one being. Of course, it's not one being. It's all of us. And they can, but we're making up that one being. That is how we look from the higher levels. And to get to be able to see us better, we have to thrust through our that one being that Earth looks like. We become visible. I remember when I was first talking about this to Daphne, I asked that question, and I said, how do you see us when there's so many billions of people here? And they said, when someone thrusts through the veil, or a group thrusts through the veil, we can see them. I'm trying to remember exactly how they said it. We can see their light, their energy. They look like a shining star to us. And so that's how this is working, that when we come together here as a group, we become shining stars, piercing through the veil, moving above this mass of one being that looks like the one being of planet Earth, of everyone's consciousness put together. And we become intermediaries then to pick up energies from the higher realms and flow them through our own lives, so it starts to shift and change the dispensation on this planet. And going back to the idea of churches, because it's an interesting, we've never talked about it. So, you know, when Jesus started out his, I use the word ministry. There we go. When he started out on his ministry, he lucked out because there was this guy that gave him all this money so he could do what he did. And who was that, Carla?
Well, nobody actually gave him money. People would give everything they had to the community and join the community. And mm-hmm. the idea of the community was that everybody was in it together, and what was needed would be given.
Mm-hmm.
To those with need would come that which was needed, and those who had more than they needed would give of their abundance.
Mm-hmm.
So every time Peter, who was always worried about money, would say, what are we going to do today for food? Somebody would come in and donate a bunch of money so that they could join the community and, you know, get on the way with this wonderful thing that they've been experiencing. And mm-hmm. so it fed on itself. And as long as people were totally naive and loving and caring and giving, it worked perfectly.
Now, who was Joseph of Arimathea? I thought he was
Joseph of Arimathea was a fairly wealthy guy. He was the guy that decided that he was going to offer the followers of Jesus a place in his garden that was a cave, so that Jesus would have a place to lay his head when he died. And so after Jesus was taken off of the cross, he was taken by his followers to the garden of Joseph of Arimathea and put in the cave there. And because of the fact that it was such a politically inflammatory situation, with everybody saying, you know, he is magical, he can rise from the dead. Well, Pontius Pilate and all of the army from Rome said, oh, we're going to see about that. So they sent soldiers to guard against anybody messing with the rock in front of the tomb. And and the weird thing was, when they rolled away the stone from the tomb, there was a huge white light, according to the story, that burst and the rock rolled away by itself. And the three Marys, you know, Mary the Mother of God and Mary Magdalene, and there was another Mary that was the sister or cousin, it was in the family, and they looked in and they said, well, but he's not there. And this was impossible. And everybody was like, what do you mean he's not there? Well, he wasn't there. That's all. There was a robe, you know, and they're always talking about, well, is the robe of Turin his robe? Did they save it? We don't know. But there was a robe lying there, and there was no body. Take it as you will. That's the story.
Now, there was an interesting thing in not the raw material, but in the clove material. And I don't know if you remember this, Carla. I'm actually looking it up. They actually, you know, if you studied the raw material, you will know that the raw group showed up 10,000 B.C. in Egypt. And they actually made appearances that people could see them. And they didn't have physical bodies, but they were able to construct what looked like a physical body. And of course, that supposedly there was a priest there that they had an affinity with, which was allegedly an early life of Edgar Casey's and David Wilcock. And they built light bodies that people could see. And, of course, that was extremely endearing to people to believe in a magical events taking place. And thereafter, there was in the history of Egypt, there was this idea of Ra, the sun god, that people had seen, and actually that title was given to the high priest that was named Ra-Ta. According to the Edgar Casey readings, Ra-Ta was Ra, the sun god. And remember, the Edgar Casey readings never talked about a group soul. They never talked about that in this discussion. And the Carla Ruckert readings never talked about Edgar Casey when they said they found When they said they found a high priest they had an affinity with, they never talked about Edgar Casey. And it was my discovery of this correlation that I believe caused me to write The Reincarnation of Edgar Casey, because it was too far out to be coincidence. And it was that little thing that made me want to meet Carla and see if I trusted her. That was way back in 2003.
I think
it was 2002, 2003.
Yeah.
So that it was that one little thing, and that was not a little thing. That was a huge thing. These two different sources talking about the same event, but the thing I'm bringing up here is that the Ra group could project a body that could be seen, at least they said that, in the raw material with Carla. And those of you who are been on our calls for quite some time will remember that on one of our Monday calls, I asked some question. I might have been a Wednesday call. I don't remember. But I asked a question about this. And Terry was channeling, and suddenly the Elohim source said, we have one of those beings from the Ra group that showed up in that period of time, and they're willing to talk to you. Did I send you that, Carla? Did you ever hear that one?
You did, uh-huh.
So, now remember, I don't trust anything. So I'm saying, is this really true? Are they really that? But they certainly answered the questions as if they were. And they're very apprehensive about appearing. And the reason they were apprehensive is because in this period, 10,000 years ago, there was, according to the Ra material, the circumstance where the priesthood of Egypt, the priesthood took the knowledge and the esoteric magical powers that were being taught by the Ra group through these beings that projected bodies into this realm. They took it, and instead of giving it to the masses in general, they took it and used it for themselves and for their own self-empowerment and control of people. And it would be as if someone was doing something. You know, there's always a way, a quick way to discern this. Because if people are telling you that you have to give something up to learn secrets, the secrets are all in secret meetings, there's a very good chance. I won't say 100%, but there's a good chance it's of the negative. So the negative likes to find things that it can hold over people's heads. And, of course, in that incident in Egypt, there was the people were flocking or to this amazing circumstance that was going on with, well, I mean, put yourself there. Imagine you were there, and here is this priest walking around, and he's holding this connection with the Ra group, and they're coming down and manifesting bodies and doing healing miracles with people, because that's according to the Edgar Cayce stuff. There were all these healings that were taking place. There were a lot of genetic experiments where people were half man, half animal. Then there was the pyramids suddenly being built, what was apparently by levitation. Now imagine being there and watching all that and saying, all right, whoever's doing that has got to be as big as I can imagine as a god form. And then there's the priesthood, the priests who were depending on the people, deferring to them as gods, and they're saying, we're losing control. And so after this Ra-Ta fellow left the realm, and after all the Egyptian, all these Ra group people that came into this realm, I don't know how many there were, I don't know if it was one or 10 or 100, but there was, I believe there were more than one. Wasn't there more than one, Carla, according to your stuff?
I'm not sure. It's whatever it took to get the job done, I suppose.
Yeah.
One is used in the plural.
Okay.
As I said, you know, if one or more, if a bunch of people visualize things levitating like stone, it'll happen.
Right.
You know?
If
only one person does it, it probably won't happen.
Right, right. Okay. So, in any case, after the physical bodies were gone, and then there was what was left was the priesthood, they have all the masses of people saying, Ra, how wonderful. And now they have got to jump on it because they've lost their power. No one cares about the priesthood. So what do? They say, we're talking to Ra. And they called it Amun-Ra. But it was not the Ra group. It was some negative source
that would say it was raw, I would imagine. And for thousands of years, Egypt was under the influence of the control of these negative sources. The entire country was under the influence. And it would have been, in my take on this, it would have been the same sources that would have been in control of the negative groups today, who are probably the current heritage of the priesthood in Egypt, which some people call the secret societies, the Illuminati, whatever. It's all a lineage of the negative going down through history. And so there's a huge amount to be learned in this period of Egypt. And just to mention that I did a 4-hour workshop on this particular period, and if any of this resonates with any of you, I highly recommend you listen to that workshop, because it has the whole story in detail, quoting from the raw material, quoting from the Bible, talking about Egypt. And, of course, in the information, as I understand it, there was that Egyptian pharaoh whose name was Akhenaten, whose wife was Nefertiti, that did something in the history of Egypt that had never been done before. And that was, as a pharaoh, he outlawed all the religions of Egypt. He outlawed them. I'm talking about the priesthood religions that were the negative, who were doing sacrifices, who were doing all kinds of things, creating fear to control people, and said there was one God. And he was called the heretic pharaoh. And interestingly enough, in the raw material, there was one reference where Don Elkins had asked who throughout history had been communicating with the Ra group, and they mentioned that Pharaoh as one of the people, one of the few, not very many. And I think he did his thing for about 20 years. He started his own city. He moved all his followers into the city. He was not a good pharaoh. He wasn't taking care of protecting the borders. And when he died, well, no one knows how he died, but at some point, his own army rushed the city and took it over and apparently killed a lot of his followers, and no one knows what happens to him. But if you'd like to know, you'll have to listen to that workshop. It's egypt.intelligent-infinity.com. And if anyone can't afford whatever we're asking, just send me an email, and I'll make sure you get it. It's one of those things that if you happen to have had an Egyptian incarnation, then you would be very fascinated by that period. It'll wake up cellular memories. But the reason I started talking about all of this, what triggered it, is going back to Jesus. Jesus in this resurrection event, and I started looking, which I haven't found yet. Maybe Carla remembers. See, you know, when you're doing these channelings and you're bringing things, hundreds and thousands of things true. Everyone thinks you remember it all, and you don't. Even I don't remember, and I'm not even officially channeling here. But there was a question where, how did Jesus do this resurrection? Do you remember that? You remember that question, Carla, in the quo stuff?
No, I don't.
You don't? Okay. Well,
I have no idea. We could look it up using keywords, but it would take too long for this program.
Yeah, well, actually, that's why I started talking about Egypt, because I was looking it up and I was hoping to find it. You know, I looked up resurrection in the lawofone.info. But, okay, I'm going to just... Now, you see, with Jesus, everyone, there was this idea that Jesus would be a ruler over others. And it's interesting because the Ra group made a comment. The entity Judas felt pushed into a corner. The entity you call Jesus would then be able to see the wisdom of using the power of intelligent infinity in order to rule others. The one you called Judas was mistaken in this estimation of the reaction of the entity Jesus, whose teaching learning was not oriented towards this distortion, that is, of ruling of others. This resulted in the destruction of the bodily complex of the one known as Jesus to you.
And it did not do Judas any good either.
No, it didn't do Judas any good.
But I think that was actual history. Jews were in that area, which is now, you know, Israel. There was no Israel then. There were just tribes, and they were scattered, and none of them had much power. Well, the Romans just rolled right through. And so they put their government in charge. And the people that were Philistines and Sadducees, the guys in power, the interest that some of them had in Jesus, and this was a complete underground movement, this wasn't official, was that perhaps they could get the nation to unify using Jesus as a figurehead. And that would enable them to overthrow the Romans. So Judas was trying his best for his life to nudge Jesus over the line into going ahead and saying, yeah, I'll be your king and I will do this for you. Of course, Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world and would have nothing to do with it, which totally blasted their hopes right out of the ground. But it's totally within history. This is the way it happened, as far as historically.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting tidbit here. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the Ra material on the life of Jesus. And the thing that's fascinating about the Ra material is that it's probably the most accurate perception of Jesus out there, because you're looking at a group that was there, that watched it all, was very connected to it. And there was the question of Jesus accumulated 12 disciples. What was this purpose in having these disciples with him? And Ra answers, what is the purpose of teach learning if there be no learned teachers? Those drawn to this entity were accepted by this entity without regard for any outcome. Now that is a big one right there, without regard for any outcome. In other words, Jesus wasn't looking at them as the smartest people or the most articulate people. They were drawn to him and they were accepted without regard for any outcome, which means they would be worthy. They didn't have to be something to be worthy. How many people think they have to be something to be worthy? They need to have money, or they need a degree, or they need a husband or a wife, and then they'll be worthy. This entity accepted the honor duty placed upon it by its nature, and it sensed that to speak was its mission. And I'm not going to find this thing about resurrection, but basically what I recall reading in the quote material was that the resurrection of Jesus was actually similar to the way the Ra group created bodies in thousands of years previously. That would have been about 8,000 years previously. The way the Ra group could manifest light bodies that looked like real bodies, but were light, composed of light. And there was a thing where they talked about Jesus doing that. They said exactly that, you know, he was an advanced, very advanced soul, that it was his choice to create an appearance of a body in this realm to fulfill the resurrection aspect of his work. And you don't remember that at all, though, do you, Carla?
I don't. The interesting thing I remember about it from the raw material was, and this to me has always struck deep, that when Jesus was a little boy, he got mad at somebody. He was just playing, you know, the way kids were, I am not, you are too, I am not, you know. And he blasted it by mistake. The little boy died. Needless to say, this caused a furor at the time. Jesus never forgot this. When he was on the cross, he turned to the thief that turned to him and said, is there room for me in your kingdom? I'm a thief, I'm a murderer, is there room for me? Jesus said, this day you will be with me in paradise. As he forgave that thief, he forgave himself and was able to rise. He learned his last lesson on the cross.
Wow.
Self-forgiveness is everything. It is the key to so much.
And I can see how that works. I can see exactly how it works. Can you guys understand this idea of forgiveness? And it's easier said than done, all right? Because it's kind of like you can say, okay, I forgive myself, but do you really forgive yourself? Have you let go of it? Is your energy free? Because the areas of unforgiveness create those areas of where your energy is in this realm. You know, if you don't forgive something, it's like an energy string directly to what you don't forgive. So it's a string that binds you here, and the forgiveness is what cuts the string. You know, I remember myself at different times in my life when I have been furious with someone, and something in me, in my mind, thought that if I was mad at them, that I was punishing them in some way. And oftentimes they had no idea that I was doing this, and it was only affecting me. It was holding me into a certain bondage by thinking being angry at them was punishing them. So, you know, I say this, the first step in any of this is to be so true to your own observation of yourself. Don't kid yourself. To look at things and see them as they are. Because if it's a judgment, if it's an area of unforgiving, then identify it that way.
because then you can start to work with it. Because until you identify it, you're stuck in it, and you don't even know what's going on. So this is a good first part of the show where we weren't going to be a church. And we talk about Jesus. And one of the great things about technology right now, and this is what I have uncovered, and I've proven to myself that it can work this way, is that we could do this without a building, without a hierarchy, without a manager. And the amount of money it takes to reach potentially millions of people to be almost nominal. Because we're doing it. This call that we do over this conference line is free. The emailings that we do, compared to how many people we reach, the cost of the service is nominal. We're doing so many things where we can gather, we can have camaraderie, we have conference calls, which I call Team Shift, where people can connect with each other individually, and we can have this without the need to pay rent or significant amounts of money. Now, I'm not against significant amounts of money, because one of the great uses of money, number one, is it creates, for me, a certain amount of freedom, and for Terry, a certain amount of freedom, and for Carla, a certain amount of freedom. For anyone that has a connection and a message, I realize that I'm the best person to thrust this into other arenas. And freedom allows me to, which I haven't had, but, you know, when I do take it, freedom allows me to pick up the phone, call people, not worry that we're running out of money, not worry that Terry's going to not be able to pay her house payment, all those things. So more money gives more freedom for me, which allows me to spend my time using my talents in the best way, to write another book, to help manage people. I mean, Carla and I are very lucky in that there's a number of people that have volunteered for both of us that have made it possible to do what we're doing and get it thus far.
That is so true, Wynn. And I want to witness to something here, and it's really strange, but it's really true. Every year, we discover that we have gotten bigger and that our bills are more because we have to buy more space on servers to handle the load of people coming into our free stuff. And every year I write to the people and I say, folks, I have no idea how we're going to be able to do this, but here's the situation. Here's the money that we need. Here's what we're trying to do. How we can possibly raise this amount of money is unknown to me at this time. I have no idea. What do you think? Let's try for it, huh? And every year, we, you know, get within a few pennies, but we get what we need. And I swear this has happened year after year after year. It's an incredible thing. I can't, you know, I can't describe it or say it, but it brings tears to my eyes to tell you. I mean, people are just incredible when they believe you. They say, absolutely, you know, we need to send a dollar or $10. I mean, some people have sent thousands, you know, they have it. They've got deep pockets. Okay, great. Thanks a whole bunch. It's really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? For the person that's sending the money,
if they send it with the right attitude. Because let's look at this from the lower level of looking at something. And I know people look at me this way, and I imagine they look at Carla this way, but I know they look at me. They'll look at me with a certain degree of jealousy. Wynn's got all these followers. Wynn's got all this stuff coming to him. And they withdraw, or they don't even allow themselves to explore what's really happening here. They only look at it in a very flat way. And then there's people that look at it not in a flat way. And this is not about my personal recognition or Carla's recognition or Terry's recognition. That comes as a side effect to deal with. But that is not the core of this. The core of this is we're creating a public opportunity for free for anyone to change their path, potentially, to understand life in a way that they never understood it before, to understand the game that's being played on planet Earth, and how to change their trajectory. Do you know what a trajectory is? A trajectory is if you're shooting something right now and you aim it in a certain way, it's going to get to a certain location based on how it was shot and how it was aimed. So each of us has a trajectory in our life that if we follow that trajectory, then things are going to happen a certain way. That's why psychics get jobs, because they look, if they're a good psychic, they'll look at your trajectory and they'll make a prediction of the future. That's how prophets get jobs, because they'll look at all the things on Earth and all the mitigating forces, and all those things create a trajectory to say, if everything keeps happening the way it's set up right now, then in 30 years, thus and thus is going to happen. Well, what we're doing is a trajectory changer, shifter. It allows trajectories to shift. And if enough trajectories shift individually, then the trajectories on a planetary level shift. And I know that we're doing this. I know. I've had so many emails from people who have paid attention to this work and have experienced a trajectory change. And usually there is some kind of manifestation that they experience in their life that says, my trajectory has changed. Like they'll have a synchronicity, and something that shouldn't have happened happens. They'll suddenly get along with somebody who's been their long-term rival or enemy, and something will shift. The relationship with their husband or children will shift. And their trajectory has changed. And this work has, or their integration of this work into their life and their integration of the energies that are here has caused their trajectory to change. And this is beyond willpower. You can't will your trajectory to change. You have to change your relationship with the higher dimensions, with the aspects of yourself that are usually you're disconnected from. And when that starts to happen, the trajectory changes. Well, here's the deal. when you start to change other people's trajectory and you're operating in the law of one, you also change your own trajectory. You can't change another person without changing yourself. If you've been listening to these calls, you'll notice that they're evolving, because all of the people whose trajectories have changed are allowing different kinds of information, different kinds of connection to come through on these calls. So when somebody donates money to the work, this kind of work, and they do it in the right way, they are going to cause new people to find this work, which is going to change the trajectory of those people, some of those people. And thereby, it's going to change the trajectory of whoever's donating the money. So when you're doing it in the right attitude inside of yourself, you're doing exactly the same work that I'm doing. You're magnifying it, because I'm only one person having these talents, as is Terry, as is Carla. And if it never reached anyone, then it would just be stuck somewhere. And it reaches somebody because of money. And it's like, of course, I do my best. I happen to be able to play, wear a lot of hats. So one of the hats I'm wearing is starting this business with the pendants, which has actually been working, because that gives a certain degree of freedom as that succeeds. But it divides my time in a way that I wished I didn't have to spend time on that. I wished I could spend my time calling up radio shows, traveling somewhere, giving little talks, not worrying about if it's financially successful or not. Because, I mean, I know I went to L.A. A couple of months ago, and I stayed at Vaughn's house. And I know that when I was there, just people were weaving their energies together. And those people now are friends. And I know there's a permanent shift in L.A. in a small way, because I went through. And I didn't do anything to earn money there. I didn't do any big workshops. I just stayed at Vaughn's condo and interfaced with people. And people were meeting each other. People in our group were meeting each other. And then we did some of those flash meetings at Mrs. Spielberg's restaurant. So it's 11:01, and I'm not going to get carried away. I think I made the points that I didn't even know I was going to make at the beginning. And let me just give it over to Carla and see if she wants to make any comments on all the stuff we talked about.
Okay, let's see. Spirit, what do you have to say? It's not about religion. Let that word go away. It's begun to hold the kind of terror that only politics could carry. It doesn't mean anything. Think spirituality. Think truth. Of the high kind that lifts you up. Think people gathering together for what intention, and sending that intention upward. This is our intention in common, to love and bless, to heal, to soften, to soothe, to ameliorate people, places where natural storms and other terrible things happen, physical, political wars. We focus those intentions. Don't call them prayers. Get all those buzzwords away. One thing that the Ra group never did was to use those words that make people run away. Realize that you're people of power. And when you and others like you band together for the good. Nothing and no one can stop us. Ever. Let the life then be lived in such a way that the rules of love apply, that we continue being people of power, and that our intentions are for love. And I think you can just throw all the language out, because it doesn't matter that I go to church and you all may not. We're talking about the same thing when we talk about getting together for a higher purpose. To be part of it, to feel yourself become more powerful for the good. Not just for yourself, which is great, but for all of these concerns that we have in this life, that we rub up against on the news. When we pray for those people in Oklahoma that are experiencing that devastation, there's power there. And it's just as important as money in terms of focusing the guys on the other side to come down and take notice and come and minister to, if you will, be with those people who are praying, oh my God, what am I going to do? I've lost everything. They come in, that energy. It may not be in words. And because we were able to attract that energy to look down and see this problem, people are being touched. People are being comforted and soothed. So they're very real things. And it's such a blessing to be a part of Wynn's non-ministry. What would you call it, Wynn?
I don't know.
Getting together for the good.
Showing up. The Showing Up Club.
Yeah. But I believe it with all my heart. And I've seen it work for so long now. I know. I can tell you from absolute, it works. Here we are. We're working, man.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the things I always do is I always take a point of contention and turn it into something. It's kind of like I got two or three emails after last week mentioning how, when it's starting to sound like a church, be careful of Carla. So, you know, Carla has gone to church and used the format of a church presentation where she is. And even I tell people, if you're feeling alienated and separated in a certain, in your area, see if you can find a church that you can attend that resonates. Doesn't mean you have to go along with all their rituals. You can show up and do something and take what's best out of it. And what's always going to be best in a church environment is the coming together of people for a higher purpose. And if people ask you, what do you believe? Just say, well, you don't have to answer them.
I'm working on that.
You are?
That's what you say. I'm working on that.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I'm working on that.
Okay.
I'll leave you alone if you're working on it.
Yeah. That's what you say. You're working on it. When people ask you, so you don't have to, match all your beliefs with their beliefs, but just take the energy. I mean, I've sat in churches and sat in the back, and, if you read my story, know that there was a connection with the Mormons, that they sent me to a Mormon church in Mesa in 2003, and that they told me that Mormons were Elohim souls that had decided to incarnate here, but then they would forget
that they came from there, so their church, they tried to make a church that would remind them, because every time souls come in from higher realms, they got lost. So I would go sit in some Mormon services at that time, and I remember when I would sit there, people would say, "Oh, there's a lot of Holy Spirit here today." And I could look at the people and I could see their Elohimness. It was amazing. If you know Mormons, and it's not, you know, the majority of Mormons now are converts, so it doesn't work for the converts. But when I've asked the question, they said 30% at present time are Elohim souls. And that does not mean that they have good discernment in this realm. It does not mean that you're supposed to give your power up to them, because Elohim souls in this realm are the source of the negative, basically, because they have so much power that they don't know why they came here, and they abuse their power very often times. So, but it's very fascinating to observe the energy of these people who I believe are Elohim souls in this realm. And I always use Donnie and Marie as an example. Donnie and Marie Osmond, because everyone knows them. Well, okay, it is 11:09, and we're going to do our personal healing session, our intention session for all those who are going through changes and need help. And then we are going to do our planetary session. And I just want to thank each and every one of you for showing up, for being here, and holding this space, and that you are part of our learning. You are not just a, how would I say it? You're not just an anonymous, faceless person in a mass of people, which is a small group by worldly standards that's paying attention. You, if we have it correct, even if I don't know who you are personally, they do. And I'm only one person, but they're millions of individual entities, and they can subdivide. They can send a group here, a group there, or people volunteer, they have affinity for you. So right now, just imagine that that's true. Imagine that you have the hosts of heaven in your room with you, that you've made the connection, and that you are in truth one with all that is. And let's experience that. We do our little meditation, which triggers this for many people. We start out with the earth, and the earth is alive, and the earth is aware. You realize that? Every moment, you are walking around on a planet that is aware of you, and aware of every being on it. And she holds the space for your life to evolve. And we see the energy of Earth coming from her core in her center, moving through the inner planes of Earth, moving through the floor, through the ground underneath you, coming up in great waves of love to embrace you and to connect you to her nurturing energy. And we usually start with the feet and feel that tingling in the feet, moving up through the body, through the legs, through the solar plexus, through the chest, through the neck, and through your into your head. So a finger of energy.
Hello? Yes.
Yeah, hey. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Am I dropping you out, Heis?
Sorry, I'm on the hour sending call. Wrong line. I'm sorry.
Okay. So we move through. The energy of the earth through your body up to the top of your head. And now project that energy a foot above your head. And now up to the ceiling. Remember, you're not leaving your body. You're still in your body. You're still connected to the earth. We're just expanding up to the ceiling and through the ceiling and through the roof and into the clouds and into the sky. And we're breaking loose from this thing that they call the veil that caps everyone's energy into this realm. But it's only capped because they don't know how to uncap it. We are uncapping it. We're moving through the veil, higher and higher, into space. And we're moving through time. You know, many spiritual tracks, points of view, say there's no such thing as time. Time is just a mechanism that's created so that we can experience individual life. And so really there's no such thing as life. This is where the Hindus say everything is illusion. We could say that, and yet here we are. So we're trapped in it. Like Joni Mitchell said, we're captive on the carousel of time. We're captive on the carousel of time. Well, we are breaking our captivity right now. We are moving through time and space, and eventually we come to a place where we touch each other, the place of our original separation, individuation from all that is. At that moment, we're all equal. We're all innocent. We're all children. We're all naive. And our energies combine. And feel how that feels when they combine. And we bring our sources to join with that, to connect with that. We have a group energy that we have all created. We are creating it by moving through all of this. And now, feel how that feels. Notice how it's all shifted from when the Earth came into us, and now we're connecting with, as a group energy, in celestial sources. Some of you are feeling, we're going to come back down, we're going to move it back down into your body. But if you do a quick look at your body, some of you are feeling this band of energy around your top of your head, your third eye, and your crown chakra. You know, in religious paintings, oftentimes they show people with an aura around their head. Let's bring the energy back down from our group energy through all the dimensions, through the clouds, through the top of our ceiling, through our room, and into the top of our head. So we just see the top of our head
crown chakra opening up to what is called intelligent infinity. That's what the definition of the crown chakra is, which I read for years and never understood. It was the gateway to intelligent infinity. And now we're going to move that energy down from our crown chakra through our body. We can see it like a slow moving clearing. And as it moves through our body, it's going to sweep out all the residue energy, the junk energy that's stuck in there. And we go from the top of our head, it's down to our eyes, to our nose, to our mouth, to our neck, to our chest. Of course, when we're at our chest, we're covering our heart area, and the heart area gets closed because of the junk we hold in there, the judgments, the unforgivingness. So if you can identify any of those things, if there's anyone to forgive, do it. Now, if there's anyone that's hurt you, forgive them now. Let go of resentment now. And just let all those things flow into this energy and release. And we move down from our heart to our solar plexus, we can see in our solar plexus the center of power. And power is not negative. It's a tool. And in 3D, it's a necessary tool. It creates boundaries. It creates people from infringing on you. It also creates thrust. It creates your ability to create a path, to let love move through that path. And then we move down to our second chakra, our sexuality and our creativity. And it's part of, it's one of those areas that's so difficult for many people because it's part of your animal body. It's part of your animal body just as the food you eat is part of your animal body. And everyone has to come to terms with what's their best diet, what's their correct sexual expression. You have to do it without hurting other people. And you have to do it in a way that's true to yourself, that doesn't hurt people. And that, in fact, you know, the best connection is a committed relationship to work those energies out. But if you can't do that, at least if it's not going to be a permanent relationship, you have to leave somebody better than you found them, and then you don't create any karma because you're responsible for everything you create. We move down from our sexuality to our legs, our feet, and back into the earth. So take a moment and feel those energies of the connection from the celestial realms through your body and into the earth. And you are at the center of your universe. And you are in the experience of the law of one. You're part of all that is. Each of us is part of all that is. Each of us is a tiny cell in the total. And while we have this connection, let's go through our healing list. And I don't even like to use the word healing, but the way this works is there are energies and patterns inside all of us that keep us contracted, that keep us feeling like we're less than we are, that keep us from being healthy, that keep our bodies disabled. And sometimes we can move those patterns so something shifts. And then we have a miracle. And we have that sometimes on these calls. And the bottom line is that you're doing it. You are shifting your pattern. But when you start that motion, you can get a lot of help from the other realms. They want to help. And we have to start by making a track so they can enter into our system. So we have a list of people that are sending things in that they would like help on. And I do believe it helps to write it down and send it in. It's asking, and the asking is the first aspect of allowing something to happen in terms of free will. And we have Colleen in Canada who sends healing and help for, let me just get to this. For her grandchildren in Moore, Oklahoma, who survived the tornadoes. And then we have Mark in Canada, and he has a rare form of lymphoma that was diagnosed in late stages and is undergoing chemotherapy. And please send him love and courage to go through this with a healthy outcome. Mark, let's just see all those areas in your body surrounded in loving energy right now. And anything that can be released for the highest good, be done so. And then we have Jeanette in Sedona. How come I don't know you, Jeanette? Hi, Jeanette. And we're in Sedona, of course. And hello. Thought this would help the connection. Powerful. Please take a look at my offer. So she does quantum evolution sessions. Well, Jeanette, send me an email, and thank you for bringing that up, and I am reading it. And that was a hard one to read because it had all kinds of funny signs in it. And then we have Lise in Rimrock, which is very near Sedona, okay? And she and her daughter are having a difficult time. Her cheese, their health is not good. So we just send light to you, Lise, on all the areas. Send me an email. You're in Rimrock. Maybe one time we'll meet somewhere, okay? And Jeanette as well, all these people in Sedona. And then we have Mel in England. And Mel is that gentleman with that wonderful English accent who trains athletes. And he has three friends with cancer. Roger with colon and liver cancer. Brian with lung cancer and Lucy with breast cancer. Put them in the light for healing and energy. And Mel, send me an email. There's a fellow that I've run into, and I'm not endorsing him, but he says he has a product that's really good for cancer, and he's very smart, and he's worked with other people and helped. And I don't think he doesn't charge. He's talking to people for free. So he's very intelligent. I don't think he's a scam. So send me an email and I'll just let you investigate him yourself and see if you want to recommend this product. Kathleen in Dallas, her job. And her daughter, who's having domestic abuse, and Michael in San Diego, sending the light to his brother, Stephen, and we have here Angela in Baltimore. Just a second. There we go. Angela in Baltimore. Healing energy for her arrhythmia and understanding about its presence in my energies. Thank you. And we have Rick with his work situation. And Angela, I don't know if I said the right thing. Forget what I said about Angela. Her daughter asked for help. And she's sending the light to her daughter, and we're going to now just close our eyes and each of us put our own issues, energy field, things we'd like to shift, heal, etc.
in this moment, when we are above the veil, when we've created an energy above the veil, where they say they can see us and work with us, put your thoughts out. Remember, this is all for the highest good of all concerned and honoring free will. For those shifts we would like to see in our own life and the people around us. And Terry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, let's call in the light and see if we have a message from those guys up in the sky. The sky people, as John used to call them. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person on this line, and any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we're going to take one break, just a moment. Excuse me. And that break was because we're in a motel in Flagstaff, and we had housekeeping at the door. So we're, let's see, where were we?
We were ready.
We're ready. Okay. And we're just going to turn it over to our sources to speak through Terry. Thank you.
We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. This is June 2nd, 2013. And it is our delight and joy to be with each and every person here. We do not come through the telephone line. We do not come through the mechanism of the radio. We come directly to you. And we are available to touch and be with every person who wishes the connection. And it is very hard sometimes for individuals in the third density to ask for what they need, to put it up to the higher realm, to ask and to then envision that what they are seeking can be true, can come about for them. They can step out from the box within which they are in and move out of that box and bring in the energy that are needed to heal, are needed to correct their situation, are needed to bring them to the next level, are needed to find them the shift that they need to get that job, to do that healing, to get through the process of the chemo, to step to the other side and bring the shift of hope into them. They are always all right in their heart of hearts. It is their outer shell. It is their body that can get warm. And they, within their light body,
are available are in the center of their own life, of their own healing. We look at the importance of forgiveness, and as one forgives, they release part of the box, a part of the barrier that they have set up of energy flowing between them and another person. When they forgive, then the energy can flow between the two people again, and whatever it is that they haven't forgiven can be dissolved, and they can then bring the gifts of the closeness of the individual that they had felt before whatever had come between them. And they can bring in the energy that can help them heal relationships between the two of them and get the gifts that they had before with that person, the gifts of communication, the gifts of friendship, the gift of laughter, and they can then move into healing between the two, healing of the relationship, and it can release other blockages where they have within themselves, they've shut down to lead out the energies of the other person, and this is not meant that one has to accept something that is objectionable. One does not even need to speak to the other person to forgive, as they forgive within their own heart. This is a secret moment, and we are with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And let us go right now to our planetary healing and understand that we are representatives here on Earth of the higher realms. And we are a team, and we can affiliate our team with the teams of those disembodied teams. I don't like the sound of the word disembodied, but those sources that are also teams. They're much bigger than we are. They're much more powerful than us. But on the other hand, they are us. It's all one. And so we're bridging the separation. And we see that place where we are all connected. We're not glommed together. We're voluntarily creating a group affiliation. And we're doing it because there's far more power in that than each of us being on our own. And we access the power of that group affiliation. And through our intentions for transformation, for the highest good of all concerned, thy will be done. So we are in the place of energy, not in the place of manifest reality. And we surround our planet with energy. We move into those areas before things are manifest. And we create a blanket around planet Earth, a loving blanket The Elohim says their color is pink. So perhaps we can see pink, a pink blanket. And we can remember that gospel song. He's got the whole world in his hands. And see, maybe that's actually true. That we can surround the earth and all of those beings on earth who are reaching for connection, who are reaching for spirit, who are reaching for the opportunity for affiliation, the indigo children, the crystal children, the light workers. We see them all surrounded in this blanket of loving energy. And we invite those whose high selves would permit it to let them join in our group in this next few minutes of planetary healing. We take this energy, and it's as if we can steer it with our thoughts. And only ask again for the highest good of all concerned, honoring free will. Let's surround Washington, D.C. Surround all of those administrative and legislative buildings that are creating our future, at least in a law level, and ask for compassion and empathy for those beings that are capable of accessing that and influencing the procedures that happen there, the laws that happen surrounding the president. We'll do the same thing in England, in London. And in Moscow. But the truth is that the hope for the future of this planet probably does not exist within those political structures. The future for this planet exists, if there is a future, in those grassroots people who are creating systems above the system, who are creating interactions independent of everything. Self-sustaining groups, communities. It's happening all over our planet right now. And I'd like to send our love and support and surround every one of these groups with this light. We send the light to the animals of our planet. We used to do that all the time. The dolphins, the whales, the pets, the wild animals. And let's embrace the children of our planet. The children are the future. The crystal children, the indigo children, the children that incarnated here to help with the vibrations of this planet and who don't remember. If you have one of them, you'll probably know they're wiser than you. They're more together than you. And you have the job of helping them understand their true nature and purpose. And let's work on the earthquakes. We know, we've been told that Earth has to release some energies in the form of geophysical expressions, i.e. earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis. And there is an area of, it could happen in a huge disaster, or it could happen in small ways, really slowly. So we're going to work with the idea that it could happen in small ways. And the greatest area of earthquake activity is around the Pacific Ocean, sometimes called the Ring of Fire. So let us just start at the tip of South America, and we'll send a laser beam of light through the surface of the Earth down deep to where the tectonic plates are, and just surround them with coherent energy. And we're moving up the western coast of South America. We can see that on the map in our mind's eye. This beam of light that we are projecting up to Central America. We move up the coast of Central America, Mexico, up the coast of Mexico to Baja California, up the coast of Baja California to the United States, to California, Chula Vista, the first city, San Diego, and all the environs, Orange County, Los Angeles. Let's see huge light surrounding Los Angeles, surrounding all the media in there, surrounding all the tectonic plate potential for earthquakes. Let's just see LA in a protected place. And we move from L.A. to Ventura, Santa Barbara, San Francisco, Mill Valley, Sausalito, Concord, Stinson Beach, the western coast of California, up to San Francisco. And again, we expand out. In fact, I got my geography wrong. We should have hit San Francisco. We expand out in San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, South Bay, up the coast. We'll just keep going to Oregon, up the coast of Oregon, to Washington, Seattle, Portland. Any potential volcanoes on the way, Mount Rainier, Mount Hood, up through Canada, up through the western coast of Canada, across to Alaska, down the eastern coast of the Soviet Union or Russia, down through Japan, Indonesia, Hong Kong, China, Singapore, the Philippines, and New Zealand and Australia. Then we go into the middle, Hawaii, and the Fuji Islands, and we now move to the center of the country. We don't have time, so let's blanket the entire planet and all earthquake activities anywhere on the planet. We ask to be mitigated, to be moderated, to come out as small earthquakes. We ask, and away from population centers, if any at all, we ask for rain, where there's drought. We ask for interventions on every level where there are potential for nuclear weapons to go off, where there are negative attributes of man-made things like chemtrails, HAARP, whatever, everything. We ask for the highest good of all concern, that these things, there can be interventions to shift the negative aspects of those things. We ask for expansion of our group and all groups like ours into our planet, and more people find these energies and manifest them. And we ask that each of you can stay tuned in for as much of your waking hours as possible, if that would be your desire, to hold these spaces, to hold against the negativity of other people who would pull you down. And to find that center point of balance and health and empowerment inside yourself, and that the things you need flow towards you in miraculous, synchronistic ways.